Much to the surprise of long-range weather forecasters here, the summer of 1980 set records for drought and blistering heat. Crops died for lack of rain and excessive heat. Thousands of cattle died for the same reasons. In the Southwest, millions of chickens fried on their feet under the blistering heat wave. Water shortages started multiplying nationwide, and to drive the point home to our then peanut farmer president, the peanut crop failed, something previously unheard of. The Bolshevik Zionists here still continued the grain embargo to the end of 1980. There was about to be a change of administration, and the new administration was expected to end the embargo. But just to make sure, the Russians kept up the pressure. In January 1981, just 1 year ago, a strange cold wave hit the United States. As the late Washington Star reported on January the 13th, 1981, quote, Siberian cold spread a record freeze across the southeast today, dipping deep into Florida, where citrus and vegetable growers fought to save their crops against the worst winter onslaught of the century. That day it was announced that 25% of Florida's citrus crops had been killed by the freeze. The freeze had also killed up to half of America's supply of certain vegetables. If that news report of a year ago has a familiar ring to it, my friends, it certainly ought to. The strange river of Arctic air that froze America's east coast and damaged Florida's crops 1 year ago this month was a product of Russian weather modification. It was a limited taste of what could be done. It was a warning to America's rulers that they were courting disaster with their campaign of hunger against Russia. 3 months later, the grain embargo against Russia was lifted. In response, Russian weather war against America was terminated. And last summer, the summer of 1981, returned to normal in terms of weather. That is how it stood until mid-December. Then came martial law in Poland. And by then, the American Bolsheviks, who did not initially control the so-called Reagan administration, had regained power here in Washington. Right away, the entity President Reagan started talking about sanctions against Russia, just as his predecessor had done over Afghanistan. And once again, the new administration started saying that a new grain embargo should be considered against Russia. This time, said the president, steps would be taken to make the embargo airtight. That was enough for Russia's new rulers. They know about the efforts by the Reagan-Begin axis to bring on war, and they are convinced that the time to talk is growing very short. They are between Russia and Russia's recently expelled masters, the Bolsheviks, who are now in America. So, in late December, the Politburo agreed that the time had come to take the offensive against the United States. The Russian weather offensive began with a rainstorm attack against the West Coast. Using the techniques I detailed in audio letter number 54, Hatton's comment is, I believe we have repeated that tape at least twice, editors. Cosmospheres were deployed partly offshore and partly inland. Those offshore, deployed in quadrangles of four cosmospheres each, used defocused electron beams to set up negatively charged vapor clouds. Inland...
Get that? Mm-hmm. That's what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Inland, some distance from the coast, duos of two cosmospheres each loaded the atmosphere with positively charged protons from defocused beam weapons. This resulted in the movement of vast quantities of water to target areas for release as rain. The rainstorm attack formation was set up to bring varying amounts of rainfall to most of the West Coast, especially California, but the area chosen as a primary target was a 200-mile stretch centered in San Francisco. The reason for selecting San Francisco is very simple. Russia's new ruling group regard the United States as degenerate, and the most degenerate of all West Coast cities, in their view, is San Francisco. For several days, beginning on January the 5th, the region around San Francisco was drenched by unrelenting torrents of rain. It continued until San Francisco was isolated, cut off by floodwaters, And in the Santa Cruz area south of San Francisco, half a mountain slide collapsed, carrying with it houses, cars, and more than 20 victims. By the weekend, the rainstorm attack was tapering off. The next weather attack was brewing in the form of a vast wave of Arctic air. The first Siberian Express was on the way. The technique used for the Siberian Express is a new variation on the Cosmosphere techniques of audio letter number 54. The Russians have now learned how to take a huge air mass from one place in the world and transport it to another area of the planet. First, the Russians deployed a large number of cosmospheres, 17 squadrons in all over northeastern Siberia. The area covered ranged from about 105 to 170 degrees east latitude and latitudes, east longitude, and latitudes from 65 degrees northward to the Arctic Ocean. These cosmospheres use defocused electron beams over a period of days to give a strong negative charge to the whole frigid air mass. The Siberian air temperature ranged from 60 to 70 degrees below zero. Next, a series of cosmosphere squadrons were deployed at intervals of roughly 1,000 miles across the North Pacific toward America. These cosmosphere squadrons, like beads on a necklace, followed a line from a point north of Japan to the vicinity of Eureka, Northern California. The cosmospheres in this trans-Pacific line formed the tracks for the Siberian Air Express air mass to follow. Hovering at the fringes of space, they pumped out vast quantities of positive protons to attract the Siberian air mass toward America. The negatively charged Siberian air was attracted eastward and also higher than normal, where it moved relatively unaffected by lower atmosphere weather patterns. On weather maps, the Siberian air masses are drawn as if they are flowing down horizontally from Canada, but the Siberian air actually arrives by a different route. It is poured in over northwestern North America above the other weather, then from the continental divide eastward. Cosmospheres pour it down to flood the land with super cold air. In other words, it spills all over North America, primarily from above, not by the normal horizontal path. The Siberian air reaches here so fast by this man-made route that it does not warm up as much as it would otherwise. The result, bone-chilling weather that has many weathermen scratching their head. And as a byproduct of this technique, violent windstorms are created around the edges of the downward spilling Siberian air. These are especially intense along the Rocky Mountains. The first Siberian Express cold wave was timed carefully. Earlier, I mentioned the January 13, 1981 reports of a freeze that destroyed part of Florida's crops. This year, the news on January 13th, one year later to the day, a killer freeze had once again just hit Florida, only this time it was far worse. Last January, damage amounted to some 230 million. But this time, as much as 84% of the Florida citrus and vegetable crops froze for losses of over $1 billion. The news of Florida's staggering crop losses came on Wednesday, January the 13th. That same afternoon, an Air Florida Boeing 737 tried to take off from the National Airport here in Washington. It was the ill-fated Flight 90 bound for Tampa, Florida. Flight 90 and many others were delayed that afternoon because of the snowstorm. The main runway, which runs north and south, was closed for over an hour while the snow was cleaned off. Meanwhile, Flight 90 and other planes boarded their passengers and waited at the terminal. As they waited, ground crews sprayed a kind of antifreeze solution on the planes. A surviving passenger of Flight 90, himself a pilot, was quoted 2 days later in the Washington Post in these words, quote, "They were de-icing the aircraft continuously. Finally, word came from the control tower that the runway was ready. Jetliners started pulling away from the terminal, lining up to taxi out to the runway. It was still snowing, but reportedly it was a cold, dry snow, much less likely to cause icing than sleet or freezing rain." Later, one of the pilots of another plane said he thought he had seen ice on the Air Florida jet. Other pilots said they had seen ice on it also. As Flight 90 waited its turn, 18 other airplanes took off without any apparent difficulty. One was a 737, like the Air Florida jet belonging to another airline. Unlike Flight 90, it was carrying a full load of passengers. It took off without incident, but the Air Florida jet was destined to be less fortunate. Unknown to the other passengers, there were 5 important military personnel aboard. They were members of a special laser warfare task force assigned to the homes of so-called Rapid Deployment Force in Florida. That is a military force, my friends, which is undergoing highly secret preparations for the coming Middle East war. Having engaged in meetings at the Pentagon, the men were returning to their home base in Florida. At last, the Air Florida 737 took its position at the end of the runway. As it did so, it was being tracked by a Russian Cosmosphere hovering high above the airport in the midst of storm clouds. It was armed with a neutron beam weapon. At 3:59 p.m., the jet started its takeoff roll down the runway. The Cosmosphere waited until the jet was about halfway down the runway and moving over 100 miles per hour. Then the invisible neutron beam was fired down through the snow at the cockpit of the jetliner. In audio letter 64, I describe the effects which are produced by an intense blast of neutron radiation. It disrupts all electrical activity. That includes the electrical activity of the human body, including the brain, the eyes, the nervous system, and the heart. When the beam was fired at the Air Florida jet, it was expected that the pilot and co-pilot would be instantly rendered unconscious or killed. That would have left the jet still accelerating, perhaps drifting off the runway, and finally leaving the boundaries of the small airport to plunge into the river. It would have been a very strange crash and one very hard for government officials here to explain away to the public. But the Russians miscalculated. Individuals vary considerably in their resistance to neutron radiation effects, and apparently someone in the cockpit retained some shred of consciousness. I cannot tell you what went on in the cockpit, but I can tell you what the plane did. The jet continued down the runway instead of drifting off. There was also an effort to apply the brakes, but the engines kept going full blast. The plane started shuddering, but the brakes could not prevent the plane from continuing to accelerate slowly. The plane reached full takeoff speed as it ran out of runway and rotated upward into a climb. At that point, it's believed that whoever was at the controls may have finally blacked out. The plane was pointed upward far too steeply and started mushing through the air instead of climbing normally. No pilot or co-pilot would have let that continue, and yet it was never corrected. Equally startling, the landing gear was never pulled up. Normally, the gear is lifted immediately after takeoff to help streamline the plane. That would be even more urgent if a pilot were having troubles with ice, as has been alleged, or if a crash landing were imminent. But when the Air Florida jet dropped out of the snowy sky that afternoon, it was still nose up and gear down. And from brake release to impact, there was never a mayday call from Flight 90. 5 days later, a Russian Cosmosphere triggered another spectacular plane crash to continue driving home the warning to our leaders. The pride of the Air Force, the aerial demonstration team called the Thunderbirds, were practicing near Indian Springs Air Force Base, Nevada. They were practicing a maneuver known as line abreast loop. Well, how nice. Hello.
Hello, my name is Les, and I'm calling from the committee to elect Marilee Duncan to the board area.
Sorry about that. They were practicing a maneuver known as line abreast loop, in which the 4 T-38 jets swoop down in a steep dive and then pull up close to the ground. It is not considered the most difficult of the Thunderbirds' maneuvers, but it does call for close coordination. The leader concentrates on getting the loop just right. The other three concentrate on following the leader precisely. That afternoon, over the Nevada desert, a Cosmosphere was waiting. As the 4 jets screamed earthward, the Cosmosphere waited until they neared the ground. Then a neutron beam was fired at the cockpit of the lead plane, incapacitating the pilot. The lead plane plowed into the desert, and the other three, following the leader, did the same. Meanwhile, by that time, the nation was in the grip of the second Siberian Express supercold wave. And my friends, Russia's geophysical warfare campaign includes other things besides weather. In audio letter number 59, 15 months ago, I reported that Russian earthquake-generating cobalt bombs had been planted in the northeast. They are concentrated most heavily around New York City, but, as I reported then, also extend northeast into New England. Since that time, additional earthquake generators have been planted, and this month they have been used twice. On the morning of January 9th, an earthquake measured at 5.9 on the Richter scale was set off in eastern Canada, near Maine. It was the worst New England earthquake in 127 years. 9 days later, a second earthquake was set off, this time in New Hampshire. If there should be another earthquake soon in the northeast, don't be surprised if it is even closer to New York City. The Russians are on the offensive, and our war-crazy rulers are refusing to heed these warnings.
I'd like to say right now that there are at least five cobalt devices under New York that can be detonated from the air. Now, all of you who count back the age of your nation and the age of New York, and when possibly there would have begun to be an infrastructure of water systems, sewage systems, flood control, etc., must realize that since they were put there, they have not been stripped and updated. And you don't have to have a very big shake-up to break loose those water mains. They're breaking every day. Every day in New York City, somewhere, there is an emergency while they try to repair broken water mains. Some of those massive metal gates that would ordinarily be able to be closed to section off a city are frozen from rust. So you can see that you could debilitate the largest city in your nation, probably the second in the world, quite simply, which is one shaker. Go on, please.
That was the end of quoting Dr. Peter Beter. Everyone still with us? This was a very long time ago, readers, almost 14 years. Do you think technology has gotten less? Who are the real enemies? Well, you can certainly see the sides shaping up, can't you? The Bolsheviks are the Jewish Zionist elements out of Russia and everywhere else around. And, of course, you have the Russian people element of heritage. And then there are the ones who simply belong to such as the Committee of 16, which are somewhat more powerful than the Zionist-oriented royalty elements of the Committee of 300 and so on and on and on. Who are we? None of the above. I have related this story again, however, so that you can see how far we have come in getting information to you. We offered this information at least 5 years ago ourselves, and we are hardly in the press business, at least just sniffling children at the task. Can't believe it all? So be it. Freedom comes with utmost difficulty. Important notice. We have not had a paper for the past 2 weeks because my agreement was to have downtime right here at election so as not to give further confusion and confrontation. That was my agreement with the elite mobsters. It was also realized that Ron Jackson would be held at least until the election so that he could not personally stir up more disaster during this time sequence. You will note now, however, that Reagan, a major holding point concerning Ron Jackson, is covered. And perhaps now the adversaries will honor commitments. I wanted our team to know this, albeit after the fact. I know it is tight and funds are dwindled, but in the overall sequence, it is okay. Perhaps even it will be that more people will pay attention as we come back to public press. But readers, if you want this paper and this input, you're going to have to help. Our people are worn out. broke, and still under the worst kind of legal pressures imagined. We ask for almost nothing save just ability to continue in press. There are others, such as the Fax Network, which are likewise in severe trouble. We will help when we can if you can just hang on a bit longer. Better to take our time and meet demands from time to time than blunder ahead blindly and get killed. Dead martyrs are pretty useless in this modern warfare. We have yet to bring you the information which has been around since before the birth of Emmanuel, the one 2,000 years ago, regarding the fact that both Emmanuel, Jesus, and the whole story is but a fabrication in book format of the Egyptian line of what came to be called Zionist Freemasonry and Jewry, along with Illuminati name-changing. Popular? Oh, I sincerely doubt it. But the documentation of truth is available and has already been presented, so it will not be new news. It is you who have been missing, lo, these endless years. Let us leave this, as there are other things to be attended. Thank you. Salu Hatton.
Thank you. I think now is a good time to have cake, and then we can get down to it. She needs sustenance to move on with the rest of this lecture.
We are returned from break. I hope the commander is back. We'll pause a minute until he returns.
To get through sugar vapor. John's wondering, what in the world is sugar vapor?
Thick, John.
And you get your bird back by asking for custody. It's no different.
We'll get it.
It's property, and it was yours, and it's your company.
That's right. That is my...
Your companion, and it was not hers to take, and you can be appreciative if the bird has been well tended. And if not, then we'll work out a replacement or something, because you need that companionship.
Well, I ain't got no bird.
I think we can go on, make heads or tails or something.
You know, I grew it from a little bird.
Yes, and they become really part of you. In fact, around the Eckers, when it's, you know, when things get kind of sad and you're feeling sorry for yourself, it's kind of nice to drive into the driveway and start up the stairs, and from up there comes this wonderful little voice, "Come in, come in. I love you, I love you." And then there is the argument over, "I love you more." "No, I love you more." And you have this lopsided conversation between two people, one a green feathered parrot and the other a human being sopping it up. Of course, that one has tantrums too, and John will get his lectures also from his. But they're wonderful. They're literally wonderful. And they are companionship. And the more time that you have to spend with them, which you do at this point, and now that you have a winter coming and less gardening and things of that sort that will require your attention in when you get back into your dwelling, you need to spend time rekindling that relationship.
That's true.
I want to talk a little bit about the subject we've just covered on weather control. I talked a little bit off record And it's not to keep secrets from anyone receiving the tape. It's just that there was an opportunity to speak of the sky patterns. One's commented very frequently about the strange cloud patterns. And we're not talking about circular craft patterns. We're talking about grid patterns across the entire sky, seeming to originate in a specific area, possibly over Northrop, or given military areas, it's hard to pinpoint them because you're looking at a very massive area. Now, you have, if you have been following our work here over the years, you will know that the particle beam or the beam, pulse beams, that we were just talking about and Dr. Beter was talking about from the cosmospheres, you have that capability also. And you also have stealth fighter planes. The F-17 is a stealth plane. It cannot be picked up on radar. Now, that's just the way it is. They have perfected that. And it isn't just flat black paint. They are able to put a plasmic shield, exude this plastic shield that makes it a stealth plane. They also are equipped with spotter beams. And for years and years and years, there has been the capability of shooting down an aircraft, either by literally blinding the pilot, confusing the pilot, shutting off the controls. This has happened here. But literally, a beam can be shot right into the jet motor engine from hundreds of miles in space. That is the technology with which you're stuck now. And they will begin to release more and more things. You're going to be in for, at this particular time, someone just mentioned during the little break that there are 3 horror movies coming out on vampires and Frankenstein, etc. And they are being released for your Christmas holidays. And then you have the Nightmare Before Christmas, getting you ready. So that the only holiday that you had that was even remotely related to peace, Christ, and some meaningful family cohesiveness, you see, will be gradually washed away by bloodsuckers. And for you who understand what's going on, I suggest you enjoy the program for the entertainment value. You don't have to get sucked in to the belief system. But it's really very hard for the little children. They see the horror movies. They are terrified. Terrified. Why would you do this to them? Well, to harden them. They too can experience violence to the point that they will simply turn it off. And there is not enough violence to ever touch them. That's what's happened to your nations. That's what had to be done to you to bring you under full control. And you have a grid system now that can literally control you. But you have another team out there reminding you that you don't have control. Even the elite on your place do not have the final control. And those cosmosphere will fly that grid pattern. And they can present to the ones down here what they can expect. They can tease you. They can put clouds in your sky, and then you get no rain, but a lot of wind, so that you dry up your fields. All sorts of things can be done from out there. And you have just gone through a series of exactly what he was talking about, where one plane after another is being brought down. And they just sort of explode. Don't
Don't be fooled. What can you do about it? Very little, except know about it. And then you don't have to waste time when it comes to your attention, the truth of it. You don't have to go through all those elaborate machinations of, oh, I can't believe it. Believe it. You're there now. You're there now to the extent that you've got to draw straws to see who's going to cover which channel at a given time. Do I tell you not to watch it? If it is frightening, don't let your children watch it. You're bigger. Or else explain it to them so that they understand, and then they're not frightened, but they become informed. The Monarch program, which trains the Delta forces, is based on mind control and torture. And you're going to be hearing more and more and more about such as a Monarch program. This is also the program that picks up stray children or your own children. There is a giant, mammoth, international child pornography ring that supply these children to different organizations and for training. And there is no way that you have a normal being. None. There is no way a normal being is left. And to recover that being within this shell is extremely difficult. It is not that it cannot be done. It is that it is hardly ever either tried to do it or accomplished. You can only fight that kind of a pattern with a higher frequency and a higher light to override the programming. And most of the time, it is just not worth it. What have you recovered? You have recovered usually a totally empty shell with other problems. God is not sending his troops down to reclaim one or two or three, because you who would serve God will not have been able to be programmed in the first place. So when you have ones, and I don't mean to be cruel or mean, but when you have ones like Ray Ellen writing these insane letters, you know, all tangled up with Mossad and everything, yes, that goes on, but not now. And you can always tell it comes with the next statement of, I've got to have $2,000 or I can't pay my phone bill, and if I don't, the Mossad will get me. That is absolute garbage. Gunther is functioning much better than he has in the last 2 years. If you can keep in separation the handler from the handled, you can reclaim, possibly even both. Put them together and they go right back to their original programming and it's over. You can't do anything about it. And this becomes an embarrassment, especially to the nations and especially to Austria, as we go farther along here and in talking about Illuminati symbols, Freemasonry symbols, the taking of the church, the taking of the religion of Christ. You're going to find those symbols originating out of old Russia, the Romanov Empire, the Tsar, if you will, the House of Fabergé, which is, quote, a Jewish, believe me, remember, Jew is not a valid term. It was originated and created for and by the Khazarian Zionists. But because of the language, I don't have any other way to reach through to you without this long explanation. So we'll call it the Jewish. The Jewish element has literally taken over the House of Fabergé. Now, Fabergé was an artist, sculptor for the Romanov, or the Tsar of Russia. And the Fabergé egg, of course, is the best known to all of you as an art form. And that is the House of Fabergé, which I believe probably you'll find is a large House of Fabergé in France. That is not an accident either when you get studying Freemasonry and why there are Paris peace talks. Always they will take place. These high-level meetings will take place in Paris. But you've got the Bavarian, German Bavarians, into the Freemasonry movement, the Illuminati movement. You have to remember when the Bible was assembled in the Gospels of, quote, the Jesus. I'm not even talking about Christ. I'm talking about those Gospels assembled. There are 22 Gospels, just known Gospels. But German scholars decided which four would be placed in the New Testament. And even those were mistranslated to suit the needs. So don't be foolish enough to say they could not have, that was God's book. You do not have a God going to war. Not like that. God doesn't need to go to war like that. You are an illusion. You are a projected, manifested thought of God. All he's got to do is unthink you. And this is what bothers Leon so badly, is when I say I can create you, I can also uncreate you. Well, he, number one, means accepts that as me saying I, as God, can destroy and recreate or create and then destroy. And that's not godly. Well, I don't know what you think God is. But surely if David Copperfield can produce something that is an illusion in front of you and then he takes it away, he's uncreated it, hasn't he? It's gone. He has created it from his imagination. He has now taken it back. Well, you're going to find that all of the ones traveling with, for, in the service of, and in the hosts of God have the same capability of creation and retraction. So God does not need to spill human blood. If he wants to destroy a city, it will be gone. Do you see? And so it has been pretty much established that Sodom and the city of Gomorrah were destroyed by some kind of a nuclear device. If they were destroyed by something like a nuclear device, forget God. Man did it. Anything from the physical tampered with and manipulated and manufactured is a human physical expression. Well, then why would God let them do it? Well, those were not very nice cities, and so I doubt that he really interfered. He doesn't interfere anyway. Why would he particularly interfere when evil is going to be cleansed? Does that mean that those were the purest of forms, life forms, on the planet that destroyed it? No. It seems like once manifest into the human form on planet Earth, aha, maybe there's a clue. How come planet Earth is so damn bad? Because man is not birthed toward being good. He knows good, but the earths of the world are the learning grounds, the recovery, the rehabilitation centers. And you're going to have a prison type of a setting where you're going to have wardens and teachers and guides and guardians, etc., in an effort to rehabilitate souls so they can make their own farther journey. They're unacceptable, for the most part, in other areas of the universal order. So God will provide a place for this experience. And it's called creating. All things are created by the thought of the central source energy form called God. You are a manifest, holographic, condensed, compressed form produced by the thought of God. And you multiply and you reproduce. That is a creative process. But it's based simply on DNA structuring and blueprinting. So you are remanufacturing. God has the ability to give the breath of eternal life, which is soul. So you have a bunch of walking around dead. You have a bunch of walking around soul beings, a bunch with all sorts of levels of growth of soul goodness or badness. And then you have some that are just walking around. They don't know what hit them. And they will just go on walking through. Walking through, just existing through an experience. And yet, maybe they're growing also, see, for the contribution they make as they pass through. And then you have the bit players who come for given parts, given roles in the play. And these are made up of everything from myself to yourself, to one that will be called a Christ. Christ is nothing in the world except a state of being in goodness, in grace. Grace is a soul, S-O-L-E, possession of God. You exist through the grace or desire of God. So I, Hatton, exist within the grace of God, my Father. Father being a term for my contributing creator. Just as a father and a mother commingle and create the ability of a life form to grow. Those remarkable beginnings were taken from you. And when it really began in this period of civilizations that you will have historical data to remind you, and why you're having to write a dual play now, is that all the play changes now. Whereas in the past your experiences would end until another civilization would be birthed. And you would go through that ever how many times it might require. And then you would come back for the cleansing or the whatever might be happening in the next scenario, the next act of the play. Well, you've gone far enough now that man has begun to tamper with the ability to create, but he has not purified himself enough to control.